Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 83, Cynthia Stein. Well, you've seen Cynthia pretty much everywhere. She's been on tour. We spent some time talking about that. I've seen her at a bunch of different conferences spreading her message. And as she says, she's not the most popular person who speaks because what she's talking about is uncomfortable. And let's face it, it is because someone's suggesting that there's a problem with your account. There's something wrong that you did. You need to take responsibility for it. And we all know that that's not always true. But more than not, and Cynthia explains that to us, it is true. And so you'll find out. Let's get into the podcast. All right, welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. And tonight's guest is, I'm very, very lucky that she was able to fit me in her schedule because let me tell you, we were together a week and a half ago in Orlando, and then she's in Philadelphia, and I think she's finally home. But, I mean, this person is everywhere. Cynthia Stein. Welcome, Cynthia.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You do seem to be everywhere lately.
Well, I'm fortunate in that I have a team, so I get to go out and do the fun part of meeting people and speaking and presenting while my team stays back at the ranch and works very hard to get our clients reinstated.
Is that the part that you like the most?
I guess so. I really like business building and strategy and planning. I like solving problems. And I like building things. This is actually my fifth business that I've built, and I'm thinking and hoping this is the last.
Well, I mean, it's an interesting point that you make. You like building businesses. So right now, the hot topic is you are bringing people back from the dead, right? They get this terrible note, and we'll talk about specifics. But that's not really building businesses. You're kind of, like you said, solving problems. But that's not building businesses. So would you say that solving problems is better for you, or do you enjoy more really building businesses?
I think they go hand in hand, but yes, I like building business. So
okay.
When this started, I started off as I was a worker. I was a consultant. I was doing the work of the work, which I enjoyed, but it was limited by me and my time, and it was exploding last year. There was no way I could handle all the work that was coming my way. And that's when I knew I had to build something. I couldn't, either that or a lot of people weren't going to get helped.
Well, you've really built something, and it's really incredible, and we'll talk about that. But let's go back, way back, right? So you went to school, and you had dreams to be a business consultant, or did you have other aspirations?
Well, I was going to be, in theater. That was my plan.
What type of theater?
I had dreams of being a director. I guess I've always
really?
Liked to be in charge. Yeah.
Like movies or TV, or what were you thinking? Or plays?
I was thinking plays mostly and maybe movies one day. That was sort of the dream. And then came the harsh reality of life. And I had to get a job. And I actually started off in public relations, which I enjoyed a great deal. It used a lot of my writing skills, my persuasion skills, and my, I don't know what you would call it, my persistence, because you have to be
so
very
PR, right? You PR, you're repping a company, you're getting, or a person, and you're getting their message out and trying to get it on a show like mine or out into the newspapers or into magazines or whatever to be heard, right? And to control the message.
Exactly.
That's not easy.
No. And you have to serve two masters all the time. One is the media, who is very annoyed that you're calling, and the other is the client who is very annoyed that they're not in the Wall Street Journal that week. So it was an interesting
Did you
job.
Specialize in something? I mean, a particular genre or people? Did you have something that you were known for?
I did high tech. So I started in technology, telecom, datacom. I moved out into crisis communications. Later in my career, I did retail and more business to consumer, but most of my career was business to business public relations. And I worked with the business media, the national media, TV, radio. I got clients on Oprah. I mean, was a very exciting and thrilling career.
You said crisis, though. I got to hear what. Give me a good crisis story. I mean, give me a story. You don't have to name who it is, of course, but something, the call that you got to help solve. I mean, I guess it's related to what you'd want to do, solve problems, right?
Yes.
So give me an example.
Well, an early crisis that I worked on was the Beechnut crisis. This is when their top executives got caught selling sugar, colored sugar water as 100% pure apple juice to babies. And the CEO called us the second time they were caught, because the first time they were caught, they said, okay, we'll never do it again. They got a slap on the hand. And then they started shipping all this sugar water overseas to third world babies because nobody cared about them. So by the time that they were indicted, the last man standing in the executive team was just devastated. He had not been part of it. And he was the head of science for Beechnut. And so we took on their case to help turn around mothers' perceptions of Beechnut. Because for the longest time, you would say Beechnut, it was like you would want to spit on the sidewalk when you said it. And people talked about doing a Beechnut, and it was a really bad thing. And so I was very proud to be part of the team that turned that around. And, you know, in about a year and a half, we had totally changed people's perceptions of the company.
Yeah, they survived. I mean, they survived till this day.
Oh, yeah. They're now one of the most trusted brands in the world.
So would you have gotten involved in the culture shift even? I mean, does it go that far, or are you just controlling the story?
It's everything. I mean, they have to do their part over there, right? The company, the employees, they have to want to succeed, because they were really demoralized when we first started. And, I mean, really, the business could have fallen apart right then. And because the employees didn't know what they were doing, you know, and they were just devastated because they fed this stuff to their babies, right? And so, it's a team effort. It really is. And I've done other crisis, you know, and turnaround work, or business turnaround where the company's failing. And what I learned from an early mentor is the job of the guy at the top is to inspire, because the team has to do the work. They're the ones who do it. It's not the guy at the top. It's not the team on the outside, which is us. It's really the hearts and the minds of the employees behind the brand. And you have to help them get to that spot where they think, okay, we can come out of this.
I could see a lot of that tying to these small Amazon businesses, and we'll get there eventually. But I can see that, you know, I guess perspectively, you know, I know that whoever that is that gets that note that says their account's frozen, you know, or whatever, that's devastating in their little world. However, you know, since you've been involved in such large projects, you can contextualize. You can say, wait a second, we can get through this, you know, blah, 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 and you can talk people off the cliff. So I think you've been prepared for that. But we aren't there yet, because you were working on growing businesses, too, for a period of time. Talk about that.
Yes. So I went out on my own in 1994, started my first agency.
Wow.
And, I was 25, 26.
It's pretty aggressive.
I was a whippersnapper, and I didn't know what I didn't know, which is a good thing, and because otherwise I might have been scared about what I took on. And at the time, I developed a concept which is very common today, but was not common in 1994, which is I developed a virtual company. And, you know, I had associates instead of employees, that kind of thing. And I went after some very large pieces of business, again, because I didn't realize that I couldn't do that. And so I founded my first business was founded on a $300,000 a year piece of business that got us started. And so
you had virtual, meaning that you had people working for you in multiple locations, not in an office, a standard office somewhere.
That's right. And so we had to look, because that was not a familiar concept at the time, we had to really look like we all wore the same jersey, you know, and we had to have business cards, and we had a website, and, you know, we had a phone system and, you know, we did everything we could to really make us look big. And it worked. It worked. And so I learned a lot then about working with diverse people, understanding people's talents, and focusing them in the right direction. And my job always was sales and building. And then managing the team was more about understanding this person's going to do better with this, this person's going to do that. But most of my team was very self-motivated. They didn't need a nanny. They didn't need oversight from me. And so that became a model that I have followed my entire career and every business that I've done.
Well, you know, again, this is just leading us right to where you're at today, right? You don't have 19 people sitting alongside of you in your office, right, mm-hmm. doing the work, right? You have them spread around the globe, in essence, right? So, again, I mean, we're leading towards – I mean, somebody had mentioned that to me, that everything, you know, leads to your why. Eventually, all these things lead to your why, and you could clearly see this is – it's like a perfect storm coming your way. Okay, and we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to talk about how – you take all that history and all that experience, and then you end up into the Amazon world, and it's now become a really significant business. We'll be right back. All right, it's early in 2016. You just came off a slamming fourth quarter 2015. You're sitting on a boatload of cash, and you're thinking, I want to do something for my business. I want to grow. Start looking at it in foundation. Look at them as building blocks. Build, build, build. Change your categories. Think about gated categories, specifically shoes and clothing. YourSourcedInventory.com, that's what they focus on. You'll get a list every single day of the week, Monday through Friday, and they're going to give you leads for about 10 items that are in the shoes and clothing, and even dipping into the sports and outdoor category, which is great. These are all gated categories. Listen to some of these ranks. In October, the average shoe rank was $7,571 for $29 profit, a return of investment of 88%. December, 11,000 ranking, profit of $32, 83% ROI. Think about that. Profit of $32. What's your average selling price? Imagine what your average selling price would jump to. In clothing, ranking in October, $6,800, profit of $1,488. But listen to this, ROI of 109%. What could you do to get that 109% return? You got to join YourSourcedInventory.com. We use it as foundational in our business. We think you should too. YourSourcedInventory.com. Okay, so... Again, this isn't the most popular subject because, let's face it, it's uncomfortable. Again, somebody's telling you you've done something wrong or you're doing something wrong. They're suggesting, you know, you're not up to snuff. Think about what you've sent in. Have you sent in items that really weren't as described? I think we're all guilty of it. And you think about it, well, you know, it's new in the pack. You know, it's not true. And you really do have to clean your act up. I think most people do. But as she says, it's mega sellers that seem to get suspended, ones that have been there for a long time. So if you think you've been selling for a long time, you're safe. It's not true. It's some of those older listings that will come back to bite you. And, you know, I think there's some reality in some of that. But again, you know, when she's selling a service, I put it out there because, you know, you want to think about it. If you can do this, and you can do this, her and I say this, all this stuff is available for free. You don't have to pay anybody for this. Remember that. However, if you want to buy time, as Harvey Specter likes to say, this might be the service for you. So let's get back into the podcast. All right, we're back, and we're talking with Cynthia Stein, who is busy, busy, busy. And you probably heard in the background before some phones ringing and some Skypes pinging because they now know she's online, and now they're attacking. Does it seem like that's just the way it is lately? I mean, it's just you can't get away from it. If any device you have is on, you're getting a call or contacted?
Oh, absolutely. I probably get about 10 PMs a day from people who are suspended, or they have an agent suspended, or they have a question. And that's just the Facebook PMs. And then calls, emails.
Yeah, once you went live on Skype, you're like, ding, ding, ding. All of a sudden, I heard these dings in the back. I'm like, oh, God, that means they're looking for her.
Yes.
You can't get from anywhere.
Well, and I have a lot of international clients, too. So this, a lot of them prefer Skype. And yes, when they see me on, they do. They just jump right in.
Well, you can't blame them. You know what? I appreciate you taking the time because you are so busy. You know, and we just saw each other in Orlando about a week and a half, and then you went right from there to Philly. Mm-hmm. How many weeks a year are you on the road now?
Well, a lot. It seems like a couple of weeks, a month at least.
Okay. So two meetups, seminars, conferences a month?
Yes, at least.
Wow. Have you delved into the international traveling yet?
That's going to be later this year. So we are actually preparing an international conference that we're putting on. We haven't nailed the exact locations, but probably in Manchester, England, and maybe Cologne, Germany. That's what we're looking at anyway.
Wow.
So we want to do that near the end of August after all the holidays. Yes, I'll be going international soon. I'm looking forward to that.
Well, let's get into how you go from being a business consultant to an online world. Now, were you selling on eBay or anything like that while you were doing these other consulting gigs at that point?
No.
Okay.
So I actually had never really sold anything online before. I was an Amazon customer. I'd bought stuff off of eBay. But what had happened was, I guess it was the second recession hit. It was 2010.
So after 2008, because that was when it was really bad. We took a couple of years to climb out of that. Now, I don't know whether we ever really climbed out of it, but in some ways we did, right?
Well, I didn't. So what happened was my previous business really just tanked about 2009. And I realized, I'm trying to keep things together and I have creditors and it's a mess and I'm working, but I'm not making anything for myself. And I realized I needed a job outside of my business that I ran to pay for my son's medical and special needs and education. So we just realized that, I needed an extra $1,500 a month for him. And I thought, oh my God, where am I going to find that? I was working hard and all this stuff, and I also needed to be home for my son. That was part of the deal. And so I found Amazon FBA, and I found Chris Green, who was very kind and mentored me and took me under his wing. And I started with $200 because that's all I had left. That was like all I had left. And I started selling stuff out of my house. Like I was like, hey, I can sell that. I can sell that. And I started selling stuff on Amazon. And once Chris's company came out with their mobile app and the barcode scanner, that's the day, literally the day I became an Amazon seller for real, because then I realized I could buy anything. Because I'd mostly been doing books, and media and some collectible games. And then I realized, oh my God, I can sell anything on Amazon that I can scan, pretty much. It changed everything for me. And so my first year, gross revenues over 40,000. And after all my expenses and startup costs, I cleared about 12,000, which may not seem like a lot, but considering I was doing it in less than 10 hours a week, that was really good.
And you said that you needed a lifeline, and that sounds like it gave you the lifeline that you needed.
Absolutely. It was perfect because it was so flexible when I did it, and it made money, and that was the thing. I got paid every 2 weeks, and so that was, I really needed that. And that was just incredible. So the first year was really great, and then the second year I wrote the book on it. So that was my first book, Make Thousands on Amazon in 10 Hours a Week, because so many people were asking me, how's that Amazon thing going? Or they were asking me to help them get started, right? And I was like, I'm busy. I can't teach all of you. And so I wrote the book. And and from there, I did some training. I did classes. I did some consulting on the side, as well as sell the book and then, of course, sell on Amazon. And I finally went full-time. After about two and a half years,
And you closed down your other business.
Correct.
And just said, this one's working better.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. So you have already had five businesses by the time it comes along to Amazon, right? And most of them were consulting, so it was trading your time for dollars, right? I mean, you were the limit. You were the bottleneck, right, as you would say.
Yes.
So looking back at it, and you have the breadth of experience, would you say that this is – I don't want to say it's easy because there's no way it's easy. I don't want to mean it that way. I'm trying to word it where this is the most what's a good word to say? You know, I want to say compared to the other businesses, what's this business like? Do you get where I'm trying to go with it?
Yeah. Well, it's really very different. It's a real joy for one thing.
Okay. You get a reward from it, right? Because
yeah.
It's – you know, it's almost that gratification when you bought something and you turn it around and it sells. It's like, I knew it, and it reinforces, right? So there's some of that.
Right. I love selling product. It was so fun. I didn't have to deal with a lot of the issues that you have to deal with as a consultant. And you just put product up there and it sells and you get money every 2 weeks. I mean, it was really awesome. And I do love selling. That's why I still sell, even though it's not a – it's not the majority of my business right now.
You just said you like selling product, mm-hmm. not services, but yet you're in the service business now.
I know.
So did is that bad?
I
mean, you went back to it? Or?
I know, but you know, I kind of when I got into selling on Amazon, I said to myself, I'm not looking back. I am done with consulting because I was a little burned out. I mean, I had really struggled with my past businesses. I had a lot of clients who didn't pay me. Issue, right? And so by the time I started selling on Amazon, it was like a breath of fresh air. And I'm like, I never want to go back. I don't want to deal with people anymore. And yet, you know, there's the thing. When Amazon started suspending so many sellers, I wanted to be there because I wanted to fight. I felt it was really unfair. I thought that Amazon really pulled the rug out from underneath people. And I saw a lot of people who needed help, and I don't know, that just pulled at me, and that I love that too. That's insane. I love that about consulting.
You know what? Let's face it, though. You've been being prepared for this, you know, quite frankly, your whole career, it sounds like. You know, I mean, it does sound like that's you're really good at it. I mean, nothing wrong with saying that. You really are good at it, right? You've handled major crises, so – you know, in the grand scheme of things, somebody's account getting shut down, it's a major crisis in their world. It's not killing or not making babies sick or doing the things wrong, but it's still – it's a major crisis in their world.
Well,
and so –
yeah, some of them have employees. They have,
You
know, I mean, they have a lot to really worry about. I mean, I have people who had to fire people while they were waiting for Amazon. It's terrible. It really is. So, I mean, I sympathize a lot with my clients.
Is it different today than what it was a year ago?
I think what's different today is not that any fewer people are getting suspended, because honestly, I think it's just still chugging along at quite a clip. And every time Amazon changes the algorithm, you know, I get a whole new slew of, you know, sellers in my door for new reasons. But what it is I think people are more aware now that there is something they can do about it. I think the panic last year was just, you know, total flop sweat because, you know, there was no one that they knew of to help them, right? They would get stuck or they'd try to do their own appeal and they would fail. And, you know, there was just no... they didn't know that there were people like me out there. So that's different. And also people have learned over the past year. I mean, that's part of why I wrote my book too. But they have learned more about their accounts and more about how Amazon works so that they can be proactive and they're more diligent about their accounts. I mean, a lot of the people we were helping last year were utterly clueless. Like they were stunned.
Were they, you know, and I don't want to put this because I'm an eBay seller, so I don't want to sound like this. Did a lot of people come over from the kind of looseness of eBay and then come over to a little more rigid environment of Amazon and get caught in between that, not knowing because it's acceptable over here and it's not acceptable over here?
There is some of that, definitely.
Okay, but that's not the most prevalent thing.
It's not, because okay. what really happened last spring is Amazon changed the algorithm, and they didn't tell anyone, and they didn't say, okay, you guys who've been selling the same old way for 10 years, we're about to hold you accountable for things we never have before. So, and then they didn't put anything on the dashboard. So most sellers are so used to looking at their Seller Central dashboard every day, most of them, just to say, oh, yep, I'm in good shape. Click, green, 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 100, 100, 100. And so they all thought they were doing fine. And they didn't realize that Amazon was collecting all of these other complaints and holding it against them. So that's why I said, I think it's a little bit, I mean, yes, I've run into some guys who are definitely eBayers, and I'm like, you have to stop thinking like eBay. But for the most part, the people who were getting caught up were just people who just weren't aware of what Amazon was looking at.
Well, they had rules, and they didn't enforce them, right?
Right.
So they're not rules, right? If you don't enforce a rule, it's not a rule, right? And so all of a sudden, they just came along and said, oh, we're going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
What's their intent? What do you think the goal is? The real goal, not the – I can't imagine there's some evil guy back there pulling a switch saying, oh, we're going to catch this net. Let's cast our net and get rid of a whole nother group, right? They don't make money unless – you or I sell stuff, right? Unless they sell their own. But I mean, they make money on what I sell. Shutting my account down hurts them. So I don't think that that's their goal. Would you agree?
I agree. It's not their goal to shut everybody down. It is their goal to clean up the marketplace and to improve product quality. And so, you know, that's why they are so nitpicky and stubborn about these product quality issues. I tell my clients over and over again, because they'll say to me, well, as a percentage of sales, and I'll be like, stop right there, because Amazon is not looking at these negative returns, these negative problems, as a percentage of sales. That was the hardest thing for my clients to grasp. And I said, you know, Amazon doesn't care that you just sold 10,000 of those. They're looking at the 20 that are a problem, and they want you to fix it. And so that was really, I mean, they came down really hard. But they were also very forgiving. So people who demonstrated an ability to learn and to change and to grow, they would let back on.
Okay, well, let's talk about that, because I've heard you say that before,
mm-hmm.
is that, you know, you've got a mea culpa, right? You have to take and accept responsibility, and then you have to kind of show a plan of what you're going to do to prevent it in the future. By mea culpa, aren't you admitting guilt?
Yes. I call it confess, repent, and execute. So, the first thing you need to do is whatever you did wrong, and we all know that for 90% of my clients, it was unintentional, and many times they were unaware. But
let's just use that example. So the product is bad. I sold 10,000 of these things.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, I got a batch, and they're bad. I didn't know it. They were sealed just like every other one.
Mm-hmm.
But those 10 that are bad caused the issue. I still have to say I'm wrong.
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
And not only that, so that's the confess part. So you say, you know what, I'm wrong because I sold, you know, defective product, or I sold faulty product to an Amazon buyer. And then, you know, repent. Basically, that's where you say, here's what I'm going to do to make sure it doesn't happen again. And then,
okay, let's use that example. What would you say? What would your advice be to me? So Steve says to you, look, I sold 10,000 of these things, Cynthia. There was some batch I got that 10 of them were bad. I don't know.
Right.
What's your advice going to me now?
Okay.
Because I'm going to have to tell them what I'm going to do, right?
Right. You have to tell them what you're going to do. So what you would do in this case is you would stop selling the item. You could temporarily suspend it. And, I always say to people, when you're in a hole, stop digging. And so that's the first step, is to stop selling the product until you figure out what's going on. And so you may need to recall it back and look at it, or figure out why people think it's defective, or, you know, there's some problem solving that goes on here. And, or maybe your buyers will tell you, you know, maybe they'll leave you negative feedback and they'll tell you what happened, right? It was wet. I don't know, whatever. I've seen everything you can imagine. And then what you have to do is fix the problem, and then you can sell it again. So what happens is people get caught because they didn't catch it fast enough. So I tell people, if you're looking at your metrics on a regular basis, and by this I mean the hidden metrics, the ones for product quality that Amazon doesn't give you, if you're watching your returns like a hawk, then you would have probably caught those returns before there were so many of them. And you would have said, let me see what's going on here and maybe stop selling it until you fixed it. And that's what Amazon wants. They know that there's going to be faulty product. They know mistakes are going to occur. They know that the manufacturer is going to screw up. I mean, the return rate on electronics is really high compared to other categories just because there is such a failure rate. And they know that. And so what they want is to know that you're on top of it and that you're going to catch it and fix it. And so that they don't have to come down on you like a ton of bricks, right? And so again, if you were to ever see I call it an ASIN runaway, where suddenly, you know, a product where maybe you have a return or two a week, suddenly you're getting like 10 returns in a day, you need to stop selling that and figure out what happened.
And so that's a trigger right there. So you're saying, hey, these are the things you should be looking for. So when you start seeing your normal return is one every so often, right? All of a sudden you start getting boom, 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 pause. Is your advice right then and there to go out there and put that product on hold?
Yes, because Amazon looks at patterns, and you know velocity is one of their patterns. And so you don't need a lot of returns on an ASIN if they happen all at once, because that sends them into, you know, tizzy mode. Danger, danger, something's wrong,
right.
You know.
Something's wrong. And logically, there has to be something wrong. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's somebody who's going to beat you out of it every so often, but not right away in succession. You're not going to have, you know, six people beat you out of it, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, and so there's that, and then there's velocity, and then, of course, there's just simple, you know, quantity. If you continue to have the same kind of issue over and over again, they're going to think that you're not learning. For example, let's say you have a product that the buyer claims is used, sold as new, and you figured out, why do they think this? Maybe it is damaged, dusty. I've seen some products that people sent in that were just incredible. I'm like, what were you thinking, man? Maybe they bought it from a liquidator, but it's dinged up. You know, it's not perfect. And so people return it and they say, oh, well, this was used. So the solution to that is to stop selling ugly product, right? Mm-hmm. And you say, great, okay, I fixed the problem on this ASIN. We are no longer selling ugly product. Well, Amazon wants you to do it on all your products. And so if they see that you have other ASINs where you start getting used, sold as new, and you're not fixing it, they're going to say, you know, they didn't learn their lesson. So it's not good enough to just fix one ASIN. You have to fix all your ASINs.
So if you bought that, let's use your example, you bought whatever it was on liquidation, you bought a pallet, right? Mm-hmm. There's lots of companies selling this pallet of stuff, and it's not in the best condition. I've seen some of it. But they get it, and so they send a bunch of stuff in. So your advice is to say, hey, wait a second. If you're getting returns in that batch, assume all of it is probably that way. Pull it all back. Send it in as used, whatever the condition they would allow based on the category, right?
Right.
You got to send it in as used, though.
Well,
and that advice would be fair,
yeah.
Right? And that would most likely prevent that issue.
Well, and
also, now you're representing it.
Inspecting it before it goes in, because that's where a lot of people fall down. They just send any old thing in, and, you know, it looks like crap when it leaves them. You know what I mean? And it's like, no, you have to have a higher standard. If you see damaged, dingy, dusty boxes or whatever, yes, you need to either sell them as used, or you need to sell them on eBay, or you need to give them to a charity or Craigslist or something, but you can't send it to Amazon.
Well, but that's – isn't it a growing pain, right? So, you know, you listen to Chris Green tell the story back when he was doing Home Depot tools and things like that. He's like, you know, I just put them in a bag. I didn't have a box. I mean, we just put them in anything and it sold, right? And so that was the way it was. And I think a lot of the advice that was out there, you've seen the YouTube videos where people, like, you know, sitting in the aisle of Kohl's and just scanning, you know, all that kind of stuff was acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody, as you said, they didn't enforce it. I do notice a lot more and more people saying, hey, can I send this in? And there's a picture of a box and it's always battered. And people are like, nope, must be gift quality.
Right.
Can't be anything less than that. And so just I notice that more and more people are getting to that place. Do you think you got somebody there?
Oh, no. I said I agree.
Oh,
sorry.
Okay. No, that's okay. And so do you think it's do you think it's brand new sellers coming in, or do you think it's the old stuff that the current sellers, did when they started that still is just laying out there that's not been completely cleaned out yet? What's your experience there?
It's a little bit of both. I will tell you that most of my clients are established large sellers.
Oh, okay.
And well, if you think about who can really afford me, that kind of makes sense, right?
Right.
We do have our share of newbies who make a lot of mistakes early on. They've only been selling a few months. We've had several of those. For the most part, my guys have been selling for a long time. And the other thing Amazon started cracking down on, I would say last fall, again, another major tweak to the algorithm, was inauthentic. This is what's catching a lot of my more established sellers. And so they started to go after sellers who were buying from the gray market. And I don't know how they know. Their algorithm is almost always dead on. It's unbelievable. And
well, let's explain what the gray market is, because I'm sure some people are a little unclear. Does that mean that they're going on AliExpress and they happen to see something that looks like a Hoover vacuum, and it's a hover vacuum, and they buy it and they're selling it? Is that gray market?
No, that would actually be counterfeit.
Okay, so we'll say that's counterfeit. Okay, good. Yeah. All right. That's not gray. There's black and white. That's not good.
Exactly. See, the gray market, what's tricky about the gray market is it's not that you're selling fake product. Your product is most likely genuine. In most of my clients' case, I'm pretty confident that what they were selling was real. But they're getting it from a source that's not authentic. Or maybe they're selling it on Amazon, but they don't have the right to sell it on Amazon. They could be selling stolen goods, not intentionally. But again, if something, if a truckload got lost somewhere and suddenly is showing up, at discount stores in Soho or something, you know what I mean? Like, there are times where if you don't know where your goods came from, they could have come from anywhere. And I have had clients who inadvertently, and much to their chagrin, were selling stolen goods. It's the genuine product. I'm like, yeah, but the reason it was so cheap is it was stolen. P.S., any deal that looks too good to be true is. And then the other thing is, it just could come through an inauthentic source. Like, I'll give you an example. I have a client who sells high-end beauty on Amazon, and he also owns a brick-and-mortar spa, right? Hair, nails, salon, that kind of thing. And through his spa, he's able to purchase certain brands of shampoo that are not for sale on any other platform on purpose. And his spa signed a contract with that manufacturer saying they would not sell it online, that they would only sell it in the store, blah, blah, blah. Well, he turns around. He has a different store name on Amazon. He sells it on Amazon, and he's making a lot of money doing it because people would really like to buy it on Amazon instead of going to a spa. And so when he was caught, which he was, and I told him I was confident it was the manufacturer who turned him into Amazon, he didn't have a leg to stand on. He was selling gray market goods.
So what was he accused of? What did they say? Hey, this is inauthentic? Is that how
yes.
it starts?
Yeah, inauthentic.
So somebody makes a claim and says, hey, Cynthia's selling this stuff. It's not real. It's not, I don't know.
It doesn't come from a legitimate source.
Okay. So it must be fake or whatever.
Yeah.
And so they Amazon contacts Cynthia and says, okay, Cynthia, you're selling Redken hair products. Where are you buying them? Is that how it starts?
Yes. So in order to prove that your goods are authentic, you have to provide invoices. Now.
Okay. And so this example, this guy would have an invoice.
No, he wouldn't, because the invoice would be his spa purchasing
store name.
His spa purchased it from the manufacturer. So even if he could show that he bought it from his spa, the spa is in trouble. This is what I'm saying. This is why the manufacturer did this. They want to know who's cheating the system, because somebody broke their contract. And so my client had to either fess up or shut down.
And so when you're looking at that, if they don't fess up, it's over, right? I mean, you're not going to get a second chance, because they're going to say, come on, you didn't learn anything in this example. If you fess up, do you get another pass? Do you get another shot at it?
Yes, usually, if it's your first time. So if you are caught selling gray market goods and you don't have a good invoice or a good receipt to give them, they will, it may take a while, but often as not, they will often give you another chance if you're really sorry. But I tell them if you fake your invoice or you refuse to provide an invoice, you will definitely be kicked off the platform.
What if they lost the invoice? Honest to God, they lost it.
They're really screwed. And we've had clients where that's happened to them. We've seen it all. But mostly what we've seen is that our clients are selling gray market goods. That's why their invoices suck.
Okay.
And they are just, you know, and that's why I said Amazon's really good at this, because most of the time they catch our clients out, you know.
So would you, I mean, do you track what your suspension reinstatement percentage is? I mean, out of 100 clients, how many get reinstated?
I do to answer your question, but it's been a little while since I've checked. The last time I checked, we were right around 95%.
Would you say that 5% really probably shouldn't get reinstated deep down?
Some of them, yes. Some of them, I can't believe they lasted this long. But there are others where it really broke my heart because I felt Amazon was wrong and I didn't understand why they would just not reinstate this seller. When we've frankly gotten some sellers reinstated who have broken so many rules, I told one guy I was going to pull a 12-step intervention on him. His report was 12 pages long, his appeal, because he had done so many things wrong. And I had to address all of them.
And you address them one by one, correct?
Yeah.
So, you know, let's talk about, you said only certain size sellers can afford you. You're expensive, aren't you?
Well, I don't think so, but yes.
I mean, you got a lot of time. I mean, I think, you know, contextually, where I was going to go with this is that we could say it's expensive. Mm-hmm. But when you realize the amount of time, how long does an average suspension, how many hours do you invest into it?
It can take anywhere from, you know, 6 to 12 hours. And that's spread out over time. So, like, I have somebody who works on the assessment, which can take 4 or 5 hours right there if it's a large account. We've actually had some assessments that took almost an entire day just to do the assessment, and that's like 8 hours. And then you have the consulting side, that's us, and then writing the appeal, which can take anywhere from 1 to 2 hours depending. And then you have the back and forth with Amazon. So we're with a client sometimes for weeks and months until they get reinstated.
And so when you put it in perspective like that, because, you know, a lawyer is going to be $275 to $650, you know, depending on what they are, per hour, and they bill you in 15-minute increments. So it very quickly is, you know, anything is, you know, $1,000 just to turn on anything.
Yeah.
And so very quickly it's $5,000 to $10,000. So where I was going was the value that you get, because you're going to give them that much time.
Mm-hmm.
So you offer 5 reinstatement services, and I'm reading this off your website right now. And so you have an assessment, an objective review of what went wrong. And is that the first place because, hey, you know, this was my first thing, right? That's what I'm sure you hear that every single time. I didn't do anything wrong. This was my first time I've ever done anything.
I have no idea why they suspended me. So,
okay, that's your first thing you hear.
Yeah. And so
you start with the assessment.
Right. Because for us, that lets us see what's really going on and how Amazon is looking at their account. And we know which reports to pull and where their, what we call their hidden metrics are. So, and we will also spend time reading, not all of their customer messages. I mean, some of them get a lot, but we'll read a lot of customer messages. We'll, of course, all the negative feedback, and we'll look at all the returns. And so there's a lot of data to crunch and look at. And then we'll go back to the client and say, okay, we now have a good feeling for why Amazon thinks this, and let's talk about what happened. And so
that's the explanation phase.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you go from assessment into that explanation, and you clear explanation, and it says here, many of my clients are baffled. And that's what you're talking about. They're saying, oh, I didn't realize that ad. Oh, I didn't realize that. Oh, you mean that also counts against me.
Yeah.
So then you take that and you get a plan of action. You say, okay, Steve, you got these problems going on. You've had this going on. Let's formulate a plan. And that's really where that partnership comes in again. Back where you were talking about in the beginning when we first got on, your beech nut example, you know, you're talking that ultimately the client has to take action, right? You can only verbalize.
Right. So, and that's exactly. So that's the thing. They have to own their own account. I mean, they have to, my job is to teach them what went wrong, how to prevent it in the future, and how to manage this themselves. And so, you know, a lot of times the issue is systemic. It's not a small thing. It's like, it's the way they handle their pack and prep, or it's the way they handle their customer service, or it's where they're buying their inventory, right? So the changes that we're asking them to make are sometimes really large, and they need help with that. And so that's kind of what we lay out for them. And that's what gets put in the plan of action, is what they're actually going to do to make sure this stuff doesn't happen again. Because as we know, it can't, it's not only that it can't happen again on this ASIN, it's that it can't happen again in their account.
But in when you said that, something went through my mind, and I think I know the answer, but let me just make sure I'm clear on this. Have you had clients that have got suspended that are retail ARB only?
Sure.
Have you had clients that have gotten suspended that are online ARB only?
Yep.
Wholesale?
Yes.
Private label?
You bet.
I think that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
So really it is, you know, so, you know, I can't say to you, oh, Steve, the only place to go and prevent getting suspended is to be wholesale only, because that's the safest one and you're going to be safe because, you know, you're buying from manufacturer. Problems still, as you say, if they're systemic, could be in a different area of the business, right? You really have to take each piece of it and look at it independently. And that's a part of the service that you offer?
Yes, is that we'll consult with them on that and help them think about that. And then after they're reinstated, you know, a lot of my clients, not all of them, but a lot of them will actually hire us to help them implement some of the plan and to make sure that it actually gets done. So that's, you know, that's after they're reinstated, of course.
Well, I sat next to a seller, and I don't want to mention his name, but you know who I'm talking about if you think about it, in Orlando. And he used your services to get reinstated. And he said, you know, Steve, to be honest with you, I own it. I mean, I was doing things that were sketchy and I wasn't paying attention. And now, I mean, he blew me away. He was like, oh, I got this report does this and this tracking thing does this. I know exactly what's going on with this. I mean, it was amazing. And I think you had mentioned that it's night and day, the difference between what he was and what he's become. And he's having an incredible year.
Mm-hmm.
So he was able to get through that, learn incredible things from it. And he credits you and your team for bringing him to a place that now he's got a real legitimate business. And when you talk with them now, it's incredible the difference, the professionalism, it's just so impressive. I mean, it really is. I was sitting there like, oh my God, dude, this guy really gets it. And
yeah.
And he gives you guys a lot of credit for that, because he was going to lose everything.
Yes. And that's the thing. There's so much at stake. And I remember when we brought on one of our consultants, he asked me, he says, so how many of our clients do you think actually implement the plan, you know, the plan of action? And it gives you a little bit cynical, I guess. And I said, all of them, if they don't want to be suspended again. And I said, but you'd be surprised how many of them do. You know, they're not just, there are always a few who just will say whatever Amazon wants to hear so they can sell again. I have had some recidivists. I've had people I've reinstated 2, 3, and 4 times, but they are the minority. Most of my clients really get it, and they are on top of their stuff. And, you know, but that's why we created our Get Clean, Stay Clean service too, was to help our clients, you know, stay on top of it every week, knowing that we would be looking at their account and pulling out the problem children, you know, the problem ASINs. Keeping them ahead of Amazon. I had a client that I sat down with before Orlando. just to review how they were doing. They've been with us for several months, and their report was beautiful. It was practically empty, and that's what we want to see, right? We don't want to fill in the boxes. And I said, so you have this, you know, Mary Poppins report, you know, practically perfect in every way. I said, so why do you need to talk to me? He says, oh, I just want to catch up with you. And I was glad. That made me happy because I knew that he had really embraced it. And
he took your advice and moved forward. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about this get clean, stay clean. So this is a preventative, just to fine tune to see how well you're doing, kind of almost like a ranking to say, you know, hey, you know, you're on 9 out of 10 things that we've seen. You're in good shape. That one you really should address so you never run into. Is that the kind of service that you're offering?
Yes. Well, what we do is we show a seller all of their metrics. Remember how I told you that product quality is kind of the hidden metrics because Amazon mm-hmm. will not show you anything about them on your dashboard, right? So we show a seller all of their metrics. And we, because Amazon wouldn't tell us, you know, you get this many and no more, kind of thing. We created our own metrics and we're very conservative. And so we have, what we do is we pull out ASINs where we see that there are problems starting to come up. You know, over a 60-day period, we look at it over a rolling 60 days. And if we start to see problems gathering on an ASIN, you know, we raise the red flag and we'll say to our client, like, we kind of have like two levels, like keep an eye on this level. And we show them that. And then there's the, you need to do something immediately about this level. And so they know each week what they need to work on. And I have clients who they take that report, they divide it out among their internal team, and everybody gets to work. You know, and the ones, like, because you can tell which ones require listing. You know, maybe it's a listing problem, and some might be a product problem, and some might be, you know, so they just divide out the report. And they take care of it every week, and they stay on top of it. And that's what we do. We call it the Canary Report. It's part of our Get Clean, Stay Clean. And we mean it to be that early warning system. And, of course, we do include all their metrics so that they can see all their metrics in one place. But we focus on the product quality. And when I sit down with them, as I do once a month to go over their report, you know, I can very quickly tell them what's going on and ask them, you know, what are they doing to fix it, that kind of thing.
And that's a monthly, that's $250 a month, mm-hmm. and that's just a continuous, you know, it's that silent employee that makes sure that you stay in compliance, in essence.
Yes, and that's the, yeah, and so the report is the, you know, it's kind of the get clean portion, I guess. And then what happens is our team that puts together the report, they're also going in and helping clean up our clients' accounts little by little every week. So it's not like we do it all in one week, but every week.
Give me an example. What would they be cleaning? Give me an example of something that they would do.
Well, so if a client has a lot of negative feedback, for every one of our clients, we'll go back an entire year and remove their negative feedback. So for some, that's a lot. For others, it's practically none. But that's like the first thing we do because it impacts your ODR. And so it immediately impacts your ability to get the buy box. So that's the first thing we do. And then the next thing we do is we start looking for other things to clean up. So maybe they have suppressed listings. Maybe they have, you know, listing errors or reconciliation issues. Right now we've got several clients that we've been getting their reimbursements for them. So, but the first step, which is great, we had one client we got $5,000 for last month.
So this is all part of that monthly service.
Yeah. But what I try to explain to people is it's a progressive thing. So first we clean up their account. Like first, it's always the negative feedback first because that's important. And then we kind of move out into the other services as we get things cleaned up. So we always have something to work on to make their account better. And keep it as clean as possible.
How many of your clients would you say, the real severe ones, the larger clients that have gotten suspended and gotten reinstated, how many of them now, you know, use your service for this kind of stuff because they realize that, you know, they're going back and focusing on their business, they're not going to pay attention to this stuff. That's why they got themselves in trouble, right? Do you see a lot of people just saying, you know what, we really need to have this compliance kept for us, and we really aren't going to get to it, so we really need to have that third party, that silent employee, I like to call it.
Yeah. In fact, we actually offer two levels of Get Clean, Stay Clean. So the level I was telling you about is kind of the basic level, and then we also have a concierge level. So with the basic level, we tell you, here's what you need to go fix, and you go fix it, right? The concierge level, they say, look, just fix it.
Okay.
And so we do. I forgot to say, one of the things we do for our clients every week also is we will send an email to every single person who had a return. And we'll ask them very politely, you know, what we could have done better. And so we collect that feedback for them as well, for the ones who answer, so that they know what's going on with their account, because Amazon doesn't give you a lot of information.
And that would be useful if your account got suspended and you say, oh, wait a second, yeah, these three did cancel, and that what they said was it was because of your delivery time or something like that. It was nothing to do with the product, or if you have that, right, that would be a supportive document.
Yeah, so it's supportive in that way, but it's also good information, because you may discover problems with your product that you didn't realize. Like, so many of my sellers, they'll think, oh, well, you know, these guys just chose this reason because they want free shipping, right?
That's the number one thing. They don't want to pay for the return shipping, so they're just going to say it's defective, not as described, or whatever, right?
Yeah, we call that the liar buyer. The thing is, there aren't that many liars out there, which is what I tell my clients. You know, maybe if you see one or two returns like that, you might say, yeah, okay, maybe they're liars. But when you start to see four, five, six, they're not. There's something going on, and that's what I kind of have to, like, drive through my clients' heads sometimes, because it's so easy to just blame it on the buyer and think that they're all a bunch of liars. They're really not. There aren't that many of them, and when every time we've gone and actually asked the buyer and gotten a response, we have found that there was something really going on. And so my job is to try and help our clients see what's actually happening so they can really fix it, because you can't fix a problem you don't know about.
Well, is this fair to say that somebody who's on top of their business and has time, they could do all the things that you're offering in your services, right? I mean,
Fair?
Absolutely. This stuff exists. They could research it. The rules are there. They're clear. Mm-hmm. You'd have to go in and learn it and focus. However, as you say, if it takes you 6 hours to 12 hours on an account, and you've done hundreds of these, versus somebody who's never done one, I'm assuming it's probably 10x that for them to invest that much time in it. And so they're going to give up that valuable time that they have limits of.
Well, and they're also much more emotionally involved, which can be a handicap. But, yeah, I mean, I wrote the book.
And that's a fair statement.
Yeah, because they're freaked out. And so you don't think you're best when you're freaked out. I wrote the book Suspension Prevention because I wanted people to be empowered. I didn't want to be like, oh, I have this secret knowledge and only I know it. You know, I really wanted people, especially my smaller clients who really, you know, find our fees very hefty. I want them to be able to get themselves reinstated, to clean up their own accounts. And I believe if they read the book carefully, they can. And I have met some of those folks at conferences and stuff. They come up to me and they said, oh, you know, I reinstated my own ASIN, or my account is really clean. I pull my reports every week. And I'm like, that's great. You know, it's not, that's what I wanted, right? I want people to not be so afraid. I know I'm like the scariest presenter at these conferences, but my goal is to make people ultimately empowered, so they don't have to feel so helpless against the mighty Amazon robot.
Okay. And so your advice for small sellers right now, go out and buy your book, and I'll have a link for it. And it's called Suspension Prevention, and it's a real book. It's not an ebook. Mm-hmm. It's a real paperback book, mm-hmm. and it's for sale, of course, on Amazon, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'll have a link there for it. That's the first place you recommend people go and start. Then they can start taking their own assessment of their account. Have you heard of people using the book and identifying a whole bunch of problems, saying, oh, shoot, I got bigger problems, Cynthia, I need help now because this is probably out of my realm of doing it myself.
Yes. So definitely I've had a lot of people come to me who've read my book and they want, you know, advice or help with something specific, or they realize that, you know, they just would feel more comfortable if I was part of the process, right? But yeah, so the book has done that too for people. But mostly, like I said, it helps because we speak the same language when we talk, and okay. And they understand what I'm talking about.
Okay. Well, I think that's just a smart move, getting a book, starting there, figuring out what's working, what's not working, right? And by using this book, if they're careful and they follow it the way it's designed, they should be able to identify problems in their account that they already have right now. More than likely, they have no clue about.
Mm-hmm.
And they can start to identify. Does it help them get scope of how big a problem they have? Is that fair?
Well, that's hard to say. I mean,
okay.
You know,
because are issues weighted differently depending on what they are?
Yes.
Okay.
So there are definitely things that are more important to Amazon than others. Like they come down on them quicker. They're definitely tougher on them. So obviously anything criminal, real counterfeit, and crime, embezzlement, fraud, they have a zero tolerance policy for that. And I can always tell when that's at play because you can't even get into the account. And then the other things, you know, definitely inauthentic is right up there at the top, along with the fake counterfeit. That's what I call it. They know it's probably not counterfeit. Like some buyer said, oh, it's fake, but they're giving you the benefit of the doubt. So real counterfeit is when they have reason to believe it genuinely is counterfeit, if that even makes sense. But that somehow, you know, it's part of a counterfeiting ring, or, you know, they have reason to believe your stuff is fake. Then they just shut you down. But most of the time, they know the buyers say stuff and it doesn't mean anything. And so you get a chance to prove that it's wrong. Like, no, it's not fake. It's real. And then there's things like not as described is a serious crime. And I think that's very interesting because that's a listing problem, right? That's a mm-hmm. problem with the listing, not necessarily with the product. And then
And you could find that out. And that was one of your points earlier where you said when you solicit feedback from the people who return an item, they're going to be, well, you know, you think it means this in your listing and what they keep reading is this. When you see that pattern, that's going to help you identify, oh, duh,
yeah,
you don't have it right. And that's could prevent a lot of problems.
Yes. And so really setting buyer expectations is so important. And when you look at retail ARP guys and OA guys, you know, a lot of them are, you know, they're selling on a listing that already exists. And so they don't necessarily pay attention to that listing. They don't change it or update it. They just list against it, right? If they're using
right.
a listing software, they may not even see the listing, right? They'll just see a picture and, you know, they don't even read the listing. I know I was guilty of that. And so it's quite easy then for you to list against a faulty listing and not even realize it. And then, of course, then there's just not paying attention. Sometimes someone else will change your listing, and if you're not paying attention, all of a sudden the product you're selling doesn't match the listing anymore. Most of that I put under dirty seller tricks, but sometimes it's done legitimately, and you just didn't pay attention. That these things are really important, and then followed by not as advertised, and that's more like, it's almost like an FCC thing, right? You promise something, and if you don't deliver it, you know, so truth in advertising, that's where you have to be
right.
very careful. You know, don't say that your magic pill is going to, you know, make them lose weight, get smarter, you know, be more virile. You know, you can't say that stuff. And so that's kind of not as advertised. And then, because then they're really unhappy when they're still fat, ugly, and impotent. So then there's, things like you sold as new. And these are definitely product quality. This is where the box is usually beat up. Like the product inside is probably new, but it doesn't look beautiful. And so when they open their Amazon box, it looks like yuck.
Right. Just because it's wrapped still inside, it's new, it doesn't mean it's new.
Right.
The whole package has to be complete, mm-hmm. and that's a big deal. So I see another thing on your website where it talks about – so the book is the first place for people to start, right? They're mm-hmm. sitting there saying, hey, I need to keep – you know, I'm now – you know, this is what – whenever you hear Cynthia talk, everybody panics, right? And as you always say, you're the scary one in the room.
Yeah.
So everybody who's listening, this is probably saying, oh, man, I better take a look at mine. Man, she's got me a little bit worried.
Mm-hmm.
She definitely said some things that I probably have done or have – especially I've done it in the past, but that stuff is still sitting in a warehouse somewhere. So that could come back and bite you, right? Three
yeah.
years it's sitting there.
Yeah.
And so the book is the first place to start. The second place to start is a suspension prevention assessment today. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a one time kind of an improvement roadmap. It's $500. And what that does is you give an in-depth approach the same way you do with your reinstatement clients. You see the exact report. So you're really at that point teaching somebody to fish. Right. You're saying, hey, you didn't want to read the book or you didn't figure it out from the book. We'll do it with you and we'll explain to you all these things. And then you're giving me back the tools that I could use to keep on the straight and narrow.
Exactly.
Correct?
Yeah. So we pull everything. We show them what it means and how we would assess their account at that moment. We talk about things that they need to do to clean it up. And so it's that's a snapshot in time, right? So at that moment, that's what their account looks like. And then they can decide, you know, what they want to do about it. You know.
Again, that's going to help with scope. Right. And I think that because mm-hmm. I think that's a big deal. Right. If that scope is so hard, hey, you're really right on the edge because you have this much. Oh, I didn't realize I have this much. That's a lot different than, oh, you know, look through and I have this one little blah, blah, blah. There's a significant difference between the two.
Mm-hmm.
And this is probably going to be another one where you're going to be like, Steve, I've seen people who've done less than this get their account shut down. You're in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
You really need to address this. And then that's where they can take and say, okay, now I need more services. So that's the second level. And then the third level would be the monthly, hey, this is what we – well, actually, I guess there's fourth levels. The third level would be here's a monthly, you know, we'll go through and do all the same approach and we'll keep it and we'll just send you back reports and let you know what's going on, and then you can fix it. And then the fourth level, as you said, was called the concierge level, where basically, hey, we found these problems, whatever. We'll fix them, but you really want to change your business practices to prevent this stuff for the future, right? Did I cover them all pretty much?
Yes. Yeah. And then absolutely. And so also with like the concierge services, we'll do a lot more of their like ASIN reinstatements as part of it. And whereas others, the ASIN reinstatements, as they come up, you know, they're extra.
Okay.
But yeah.
So they're a la carte. And you're also doing account management. If you're, you know, taking care of suppressed inventory and all the rest of that, you really are doing a lot of account management
mm-hmm.
there. Okay. And then the other services you offer is the reinstatement. And I think we've gotten through that. It's an amazing business. It's not good that your business is booming. And you are booming, right? Is that fair to say?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We are. I mean, it's shocking, really. It really is shocking.
Did you ever think it would take off this strong? I mean, you must have known that there were issues out there, but did you ever realize the scope of how big they have gotten?
No. I mean, here's the thing. When I first, like, I had handled some reinstatements with some of my clients. They just come to me, you know, these are just consulting clients. I got them reinstated. And so in February of 2015, I kind of put out my little, or actually it was like early, maybe the end of February, early March, I put out my little electronic shingle. You know, and I said, oh, you know, I do these, right? And I wrote a blog post or two, and I thought I might get, you know, one or two a month of these. That's what I thought. I thought it would just be a little nice little extra service that I could do for people. And I was washed away in a tidal wave. I mean, I was panicking and having panic attacks. Because I had so much business, and I brought on my business partner. We started bringing on other people. I mean, we've been growing frantically, but we went from zero, just me, last year in March, to 20 people today.
Working on this.
Yes. And so, yeah, I've never had a business grow that fast. for me personally.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, that says something. You know, when we were together at this conference, somebody mentioned to me that you're getting the majority of this business. And the reason you're getting that majority of this business is because it works, right? And mm-hmm. people are learning from it. So, and you're out there, you know, talking about it, and, mm-hmm. and people are saying, ooh. That's resonating with them. They're mm-hmm. saying, ooh, I see a little bit of myself in those.
Yeah.
Now, what's the best way to get in touch with you? Your website is onlinesalesstepbystep.com, and I'll have links to that. And on there on the top, I notice reinstatement consults. There's also a really a Q&A, and then there's a reinstatement center, and just a whole bunch of other things in here, including links to your books. You have two books, and I'll mm-hmm. have links to those too for you. It is pretty complete. It seems like you really do a good job of explaining what people can expect with each of those services, and you don't hide the costs, and I really appreciate that. I'll be honest with you. I'd rather know up front, hey, it's going to be $2,000 or $3,000. I'd rather know. Because I got, you know, when you're selling a lot, you know, that's not that much money, but you want to prospectively know that it's not an endless ongoing coming back and nickel and diming mm-hmm. for it. And that's a big deal. And so I really appreciate that. I mean that. That really does make sense. What's the best way to get in touch with you? Is there a contact? I see a phone number.
Yes,
I see phone numbers.
We have a phone number, and there is a real person who answers it, and she will put you to the right extension. That's one way to get in touch with me. My email, cynthia@onlinesalesstepbystep.com. I'm on Facebook, and so people often find me that way and out on the groups. I do try to answer questions when I can. And then, of course, you see the phone number. Oh, and then signing up for a service. So we have... a lot of our processes automated, you know, we just had to in self-defense. And so once you get into the system, you know, you'll get emails, there'll be things that go into motion to move you right through the service, basically. And so, you know, obviously you can just go sign up and you'll immediately get communications from us, and we'll be calling you to set a time and everything.
Okay. And so all that stuff is available out on the site, and I'll have links to it all. I really appreciate you taking the time. I mean, I know your life is hectic, and, you know, I mean, people will understand the dings in the background or people reaching out to you and trying to contact you. As you say, you got international clients, and they're trying to get you too. Mm-hmm. So I really appreciate it. And the other place to see Cynthia is at pretty much every conference. She's there, and, you know, I mean, and you're so approachable, which is so cool that, you know, that you'll just, you know, people coming up to you the whole time like, hey, what about this? What about this? Mm-hmm. And so I really appreciate that too. And I just wish you nothing but success. I hope your business doesn't grow. I hope it gets smaller.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing personal. I want to see you help grow businesses, not have to save businesses. But, you know, if there's somebody who should be doing it, it sounds like it should be you. It sounds like you've been meant to do it. And it sounds like you're never going to get away from it. I think you've found your calling.
Yeah, I think you're right. Thank you
All
so
right.
much. It's been a
well,
pleasure.
I really appreciate you taking the time. Hey, thank you so much. Have a good night.
Bye.
Okay, again, not the best subject for everyone. I don't want to bring anybody down, but it is something you do have to think about. You know, think about if your account was shut down for a day, a week, several weeks, which is really the scenario we're all looking at. How much money do you lose? Why not consider having somebody give you a checkup, as she said, or doing it yourself? More importantly, just get it done, right? And that's the key. So, you know, hope you enjoyed it. You know, she isn't the most popular speaker, but let me tell you, she gets the most interaction of every conference I went to. She gets the most questions, the most feedback. People are grabbing her in the hallway, and that tells you something. You know, she is really knows her stuff. Real candid, real direct, but what a wonderful woman. Really nice, really friendly, and real genuine. Hope you enjoy it. ecommercemomentum.com. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.